Today's episode is sponsored by Musicians Maintenance. What's Musicians Maintenance? Well, do you ever experience aches and pains after long practice sessions or intense rehearsals? It can be tempting to just push through or hope that the discomfort eventually goes away on its own. But that's not really the answer, of course. Cody Weisbach is a doctor of physical therapy who specializes in musicians' health. He's curated a free two-week program called Musicians Maintenance that is designed to not only relieve these nagging aches and pains, but also set yourself up to prevent more serious injuries in the future. Through a series of short daily emails with clear how-to videos, you'll gain helpful insights into the critical muscles that we often neglect the most and learn simple yet effective exercises tailored specifically to a musician's needs. You'll not only learn what to do and how to do it, but why exactly it will help you as well. Here's what one pianist who went through the program had to say. Just wanted to say a quick thanks. I'm training for a Chopin concert, and I started to feel like I'm really straining my shoulders and neck. A quick search into your past newsletters pretty much gave me all I needed to start releasing the tension I built up. I really appreciate all the work you put into these. If you think about how much sitting we do and how much time we spend squinting at screens and devices and the music on the stand in front of us, it can be easy to develop poor postural habits and weak, tight muscles without realizing it. Cody's program takes just 5 minutes a day and is designed to counteract all of this poor posture time, enabling you to feel more physically balanced and ultimately be a healthier and happier practicer. It's also a great way to warm up your body in the morning before practicing, instead of just diving in cold. The Musicians Maintenance program is completely free, and you can get started today at musiciansmaintenance.com/bulletproof. That's musiciansmaintenance.com/bulletproof. This is Noah Kageyama, and you're listening to the Bulletproof Musician Podcast. Every Sunday morning, we'll take a look at a new research-based tip or technique to help you practice more effectively or perform better under pressure. And on the first Sunday of every month, I'll have a guest from the music, sport, or research world who will share their insights on how we can all be a little more awesome in the practice room and on stage. My daughter was 5 when she started violin lessons, and at first it was pretty chill and super cute. But then I started to get a little antsy. It's not like we were trying to groom her to be the next Heifetz, but still, I began to worry about the goofy way she was holding the instrument, her funky bow hold and claw of a left hand, her sumo wrestler style power stance. In other words, everything. So naturally, I tried giving her some tips. How to hold her right hand thumb bent, but also make sure her fingers on the top of the bow weren't all flat and stiff. How to keep her bow straight. My intention was to be helpful, but the more advice I gave her, the worse things seemed to get, and the more frustrated and confused she seemed to become. At first, I thought the problem was that I just wasn't a good teacher, that I wasn't giving her the right technical instructions or couldn't explain them clearly enough. But it turns out the problem was essentially the opposite. I was actually trying to be too helpful in my efforts to be a good teacher. What do I mean by that? Well, have you ever gone to the grocery store without a written-out shopping list, where you try to keep the items inside your head instead? If so, you know what it's like to use what's known as working memory. It's a bit like a mental scratch pad where you can store bits of information that you're actively using in the moment. The problem, of course, is that working memory has limits. And we can only keep so much stuff in our heads before things start spilling out. Plus, whatever we keep there tends to fade away pretty quickly anyhow. And how exactly does this apply to teaching or practicing? Well, working memory capacity varies from person to person. So a multinational team of researchers were curious to see how working memory differences might affect the learning process. They recruited 111 third and fourth graders and gave them a series of assessments designed to measure working memory. Then the 24 students with the highest working memory capacity and the 24 students with the lowest working memory proceeded with a tiny bit of basketball training. To see how working memory capacity might affect learning, the researchers made every student practice shooting a basketball under conditions that were designed to tax their working memory. The idea being, if working memory capacity was indeed an important factor in learning, they'd likely see some sort of difference in the two groups' eventual performance. On day one of practice, students took 20 shots to establish their baseline level of shooting ability. Then they were given a handout with 5 written technical instructions and asked to take 60 practice shots. After every 20 shots, they were given a 2-minute break to reread the instructions. The 5 technical instructions were: number 1, bounce the ball on the ground twice before each shot. Number 2, start with your elbow under the ball. Number 3, use both hands to hold the ball, but only shoot with one hand. Number 4, extend your arm fully when shooting. And number 5, finish the shot by pointing the shooting hand towards the rim. On day 2 of practice, they took 120 practice shots, again with a 2-minute break every 20 shots to read the instructions. On day 3, they took 60 more shots, and then finished with a test of 20 shots to see how much they improved over the 3 days of practice. Finally, a week later, everyone returned to take one last 20-shot test to see how well ingrained their skills really were. So, was there any difference in performance between the high and low working memory groups? The first aspect of performance that the researchers looked at was shooting form or technique. Based on the video analysis of the performances, the high working memory group improved their shooting technique quite a bit over the course of the training. Their score improved by an average of 12 points from day 1 to day 4. The low working memory group, on the other hand, only improved by about 5 points over the course of training. That said, we do kind of have to take this with a grain of salt, as the difference didn't reach statistical significance. However, when it came to shooting performance, things were a little clearer. The high working memory group improved their shooting score by about 5.6 points from their initial pretest to their final test a week after their last practice session. Meanwhile, the low working memory group actually got worse over the course of training, with scores dropping by 5.5 points on average. That's right, they actually shot the ball better before they received any instruction or practice. So at this point, you might be thinking, I wonder if there's a way to assess working memory so I can tailor instructions to each student. Well, that would be pretty cool, but the researchers note that the current methods for assessing working memory aren't really practical for teachers or coaches to use. For instance, the researchers in this study used 4 different measures of working memory plus 2 measures of attention, all of which took about an hour to administer per participant. However, they do note that it might be possible to informally estimate a student's capacity. Basically, just give the student a task to do and vary the complexity of your instructions to see how they respond. Like, what happens if you give them 5 instructions? Do they seem overwhelmed? What if you give them just 3, or maybe 1 or 2? Or if you're trying to apply this to your own practice, try focusing on fewer things at once, which could make it easier not just to make the desired adjustments, but also gauge whether those adjustments are actually coming through in your playing. There are also other strategies, beyond lots of verbal instruction, that could perhaps help to reduce the working memory demands of a learning task too. Like breaking a skill down into smaller chunks, or additively chaining skills together, or adopting an external focus of attention in the early stages of learning. For me, the big takeaway is that individual differences in working memory could potentially have a significant impact on learning, and that this may be why some people seem to respond pretty well to lots of explicit technical instructions, while others get paralyzed and seem to regress instead. So, in the case of my daughter, it's not that she didn't understand what I was saying, or that she didn't have ability or talent. The problem was that I was asking her to think about too many things at once, probably overwhelming her working memory capacity. Where instead of giving her even more instructions when it seemed like she wasn't getting it, I should have done the opposite by reducing the number of things she had to think about. You can find links to this week's study and other resources at bulletproofmusician.com/blog. And if you found the episode helpful, please share it with a friend or practice buddy who you think might also enjoy experimenting with this during the coming week.